Welcome. Thank you for being here today. We're really excited to be here to share with you about MBAM 2.5. Hopefully you've made it to the right session. We are excited to be able to be in Europe. This is my first time in Spain. It's pretty cool. I enjoy it a lot. My name is Nate Kanan, and this is Jeff Pinkston. I am the MBAM lead, engineering lead, and Jeff is the MDOT manager. And we want to start off a little bit today before we start with this confidentiality slide. We're actually not planning to share anything confidential today.
I don't think we know anything confidential, do we?
Yeah, we don't really know anything confidential, so I think we're good here. If we ever have a chance, we want to share some nugget with you that we don't really know yet, then we'll let you know. So, real quickly, let me kind of explain what we like to see. By the time you leave today, we'd really like you to get an understanding of what MBAM is all about. I know we have a wide variety of an audience here. Some of you know MBAM quite a bit, some of you don't. But when you leave, we want you to understand the fundamental purpose of what MBAM is. We also want you to get a glimpse into the whole look on how do you set MBAM up in a complex environment to support like high availability, as well as disaster recovery and that kind of thing. We'll also get a small glimpse into what it's like to configure the client to enforce encryption. And this will improve your numbers in terms of your organization, getting those compliance numbers up across your org. And we'll end kind of with a look at performance and what we can do with that, and how it will really save you some money. So really, that's kind of the introduction of what we want to talk about today, what we want you to take away with. The biggest thing is, with MBAM 2.5, we've done some really cool things that enable these scenarios. So let's talk real quickly about what is MBAM. But first, I got a question for you. How many of you are here because you want to learn about what MBAM is? Okay, great.
It's about half.
Yeah. Now, let me ask a question. How many people have used MBAM before? Okay. How many have used MBAM 2.5 before?
Okay. Very few.
Just a few. Well, this is great because I think we'll hit on a lot of the points that will get you up to speed as to what MBAM is, as well as the new features that 2.5 provides. So, first of all, let's understand what MBAM does for us. Okay? BitLocker is this great tool inside of the operating system today. It takes a computer, it can take all the drives, it encrypts those, it all happens behind the scenes as you write to the drive and so forth. However, it's kind of a process to get it going. You sit down at a client machine, you go to the control panel, you enable it there. It makes a printout of a recovery key, which you may need later, so you stick that in a file cabinet somewhere, right? And it's great because then everything's encrypted, you have a secure environment on this one PC. However, if you need to go into recovery mode, then you're going through the file cabinet looking for that recovery key. You type it in, and now you're back to where you're at, where before. That's a great process. It works really well, but it doesn't scale very well. So MBAM was introduced to solve that problem. It actually does several things. The first thing that MBAM does is that it supports enactment. And when we talk about enactment, what we're saying is that it will configure the TPM, it will configure BitLocker, according to some policy that you set up in your Active Directory, okay? The other thing that it does is it will report compliance. It will go actually to a service and say, this computer meets the compliance, it's encrypted with these keys and so forth, it meets the expectation. The third thing that it does is it really provides a recovery scenario. No longer are they pulling recovery keys out of the file cabinet. They're actually use some services we provide some web portals that they could recover via the help desk or a self-service portal to get those recovery keys. And the last major piece is kind of a reporting piece. This reporting piece lets an administrator look at their entire organization and say, is my organization encrypted all up? What percentage of the company needs to still be in compliance? And you can drill down from there. That's the major objectives. So if we look back at the history of MBAM, what we're really saying is that in spring of 2012, we introduced these core functions, which I just talked about. Okay? You have a place for a client to enact, it can report up, and you could use a help desk portal by a call of the help desk to retrieve your recovery key. Then a year later, we said, hey, wouldn't it be nice if a user could actually get their own recovery key, and we introduced the self-service portal. Then we also said, hey, wouldn't it be nice if you could actually use Configuration Manager to get the compliance information, and we integrated that in as well. Then a few months later, we released a service pack, which made this available into 12 different languages. But now we're actually at MBAM 2.5, which was released in May, and this provided some highly requested features by customers. First of all, now you can take MBAM and you can make it highly available, you can scale it, you can put it into a multi-forest domain. The deployment improvements, we looked at how we set this up and how it is actually configured, and we broke up the setup from the actual configuration. And you can do this both by a wizard or by PowerShell today. We also improved the client by adding some PIN complexity. You can set this policy, or you can enforce policy to basically move the encryption along a little quicker in your organization. So in order to understand all of this, let's understand the workflow of how MBAM works. It all starts with a client. This client needs to be encrypted. Basically, we install a small agent onto the client machine. It reads policy. This policy comes down and instructs this agent how to set up the TPM, how to set up the encryption, and it goes through that process of enacting that, sometimes through the use of the user and sometimes automatically. It reports, or it takes those encryption keys and it actually pushes them up through an escrow service. This can be stored in a secure database. It's a central location where all of these recovery keys can go. That's the main scenario. Sometimes a user will get into a recovery scenario where they need that recovery key back. The way they do that is they go to a self-service portal or they go to a help desk portal, and the help desk can actually help them and facilitate pulling that key for them. Two different ways. So to make this up, these are the major components of MBAM. You have a front end. The front end consists of an administrative website. This is the help desk portal. It also includes a service for escrowing the key so the client can actually talk to this server infrastructure. Everything in green here is actually a server piece. Okay? We also have a self-service portal. And this self-service portal is the place that a user can go to recover their own key. And that's all the front end. Now, if you actually flip to the back end, on the back end, you have a database component. You have two databases, essentially. One holds the recovery information, and the second one has the compliance and audit information. All right? The little trick on this one is that the compliance information can actually be configured in its own database like this, or it can be configured in Configuration Manager. Okay, and that's kind of what the middle tier is showing you there. And the reports are tied to which database it's at. So when you set up MBAM, you have a choice of, I want a standalone infrastructure, or I want CM integrated, which means I want the compliance and reporting to be done in CM or System Center. So let's look at some of the improvements that we've done in MBAM 2.5. One of the challenges we had with MBAM 2.0 is that it really didn't support like a web farm, it didn't support a cluster, it didn't work in a complex multi-forest environment. We've heard this feedback from customers and we said, yes, we need to do this. And so in 2.5, we made those changes, and this took a little bit of re-architecture, and the biggest change essentially was from the 2.0 product to the 2.5 is that we changed who runs the services. And we'll talk about that. But essentially, instead of having local groups and having a local account to run the services, we moved those to Active Directory accounts. Okay? Here is our demo architecture, and this is what we want to show you today. Is most of the rest of the demo today, or the session today, will be a demo, and this is what we want to build. This is essentially an MBAM infrastructure that provides a web farm for the front end through a network load balancer and two SQL servers that are connected via a cluster. Actually, we're going to use an availability group, but you'll see how that works in a few minutes. Okay? Now, as part of that, we need to be able to understand who talks to what. And if you look at this, the most important part of this diagram is the right-hand side. Excuse me. The right-hand side is where you have an app pool account and you have a report service account. These are the accounts that are now in Active Directory that run the websites and the reporting server. Okay? So the app pool account is basically the account that runs in IIS, because we configured in IIS, and it has read-write access to the database. This is important so it can do both taking the keys and so forth and the compliance information from the client and storing them in the database, as well as reading the database so that it can recover from those and get the recovery information. So that requires both of those writes. The second service account we need is this reporting service. It only needs read access because it just needs it for the reports, okay? And it will be set up in SSRS, or SQL reporting services. So let me do a quick demo and show you what these user accounts look like. Oh, one more thing I want to point out. The front end there, those are our groups that we set up. In order for a client to talk to our MBAM infrastructure, you don't have to do anything special. It just uses the machine accounts. You're good to go. To talk to a self-service portal, you just have to be a domain user. However, we do want to lock down access to the help desk and the reports, and so we create two separate groups for those.
But thank you.
All right. Let me log in here. This is not the right. Here we go. We're going to use an all-inclusive virtual environment to show this demo. Let me zoom in so you can see in the back. We have a client. We have a domain controller. We have two SQL boxes. And we have two web servers. And this is what we're going to configure today. I first want to look at the domain controller. Whoa.
Kill it. Start it again. That won't do it.
If you hold on one sec, you know how to change that.
You gotta kill it. Start it again. Nope.
Nope.
Wow, of all the things that failed for us while we were preparing this demo, we never thought it would be screen resolution. Oh, the magnifier's on.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my goodness.
Do it again.
You get a little nervous when you're up here. It's all right.
Do it again.
Okay. Okay, let's try that again. Full screen. Still not right, but that's okay. We can see what we need right now. If we look at these groups, these are the groups we set up for MBAM. We can't see them all. Oh, the magnifier's still on. Views.
Just kill it.
There we go. Okay. There we go. So, first of all, these are the two accounts that you care about the most. This is the app pool account and the report service account. These are accounts that we created in Active Directory that will run the websites and the reports. We also created some user groups to restrict who can access the help desk. This first one is basically the second tier of the help desk you could think about, where they have access to any recovery key. Where the help desk user needs some additional information, such as user information, to be able to pull a recovery key. This group is essentially for the help desk or the reports to restrict who has access to those reports. Okay? This guy and this guy are essentially just users that we will use to demo this behavior. Okay? Let me switch back here to the PowerPoint. Great. And we'll turn the time over to Jeff to talk about how to set this up.
Thanks, Nate. Hello, everyone. We're going to walk through configuring these different environments. I'm going to start with SQL. I'm going to do a couple of things. I'm going to show you, first of all, how to set up secure communications with SQL, because we want to make sure connections to the database from our web services run under SSL rather than under an open channel. And we're going to configure that for both SQL Server and for SSRS, SQL Server Reporting Services. Now, we're going to show you how to set up an availability group in SQL Server. Now, availability group relies on an underlying technology in the platform in Windows called Windows Clustering. We're not going to create a Windows cluster. Frankly, we've gone through that exercise about 7 times this week, and it's a little flaky. It's very temperamental in running in VMs. So we're going to show you a cluster that exists, and we're not going to touch that. We're just going to use that cluster. We'll then install the databases into one of the servers. We'll create the availability group. We'll use the availability group to replicate the MBAM databases to the second server. And then finally, we'll finish up by installing SQL reporting, our MBAM reports for SQL reporting services. So let me switch over to the demo environment. So I'm going to log into my first SQL server. It is called MBAM SQL 1. So the green kind of indicates what machine I'm on. First thing I want to do is just show you that we have a cluster environment up and running. So right here you'll see we've created a cluster called MBAM Cluster 2. Now MBAM Cluster 2 consists of 2 nodes. You'll see those here, MBAM SQL 1, MBAM SQL 2. And down here, you'll see that that cluster is online. Okay, great. So I'm going to close the cluster manager. As I said, the first thing I want to do is make sure that I have secure communication set up. So I'm going to come into, this is the SQL Server Configuration Manager, and I'm going to configure the network configuration. I'm going to go to Protocols. Let me zoom in here. And I'm going to open the protocols properties. And I'm going to set forced encryption to yes. And I'm going to select a certificate. Now, we pre-installed a certificate on this machine and on the other machine. And obviously, it's the same certificate, so they can communicate to each other as well. I'm going to hit apply. It's going to tell me I need to restart the service. So I'm going to go up to the SQL services that are running. You'll see SQL service here. Let me zoom in. Now before I restart, The second thing you have to do when using availability groups is you have to actually check to make sure that the cluster, the Windows cluster, is configured and that you enable availability groups. So you go to this tab that's always on high availability under the properties for the service. You make sure that that cluster name that we saw earlier is there, and you click this checkbox that says enable always on availability groups. So I've done that. I click OK. It's going to remind me again. You still need to restart the service. So I'm finally going to restart the service. So I've set up my secure communications, and I've enabled availability groups on this machine. We've already done that on the second machine, prepared that, so we don't have to go over and do that as well. There's one more place where I need to configure security in terms of my HTTP calls to the SQL Server reporting services. So I'm going to come here to the SQL Server Reporting Services Configuration Manager. I'm going to select Web Service URL. I'm going to pick that same certificate and click Apply. And I have to do this in one more place. So as soon as this applies, I'm going to come down here to this area, this tab called Report Manager URL. And we're almost done. There we go. And, this UI is a little different. I actually have to come under Advanced, and under the SSL section, I have to add a SSL port, set my cert file here as well. And then once I click Done, that will run. It will configure SSRS to use SSL. Okay, great. I'm done configuring secure communications. Now that I'm done with that, I can go ahead and install the databases into this server. So I'm going to run the installer, go through these nice little wizard. I accept the license term. I am not going to select Microsoft Update because, heaven forbid, I let Microsoft update my servers when they want to rather than when I want to. I'm also not going to join the customer experience program, because I don't trust that Microsoft is going to necessarily not steal my private information. That's a joke. Please don't blog about that. And I'm going to run the installer. Now, the installer, this is one of the biggest changes we made. If you've used 2.0 or a previous product, the entire installation and configuration of MBAM was all driven through MSI. And so you literally had to take that MSI and go to the server you were on and run the full experience. What we've done now is we've actually taken the installation, and all it does is takes the definition of the databases, the binaries that run MBAM, and puts it on the machine. Once the installation runs, then we'll run a new tool. We call it the configurator or the configuration tool for MBAM. And that will allow me to specify a bunch of configuration parameters that will then enable different features of MBAM on different servers. So when I finish running the installer, it actually gives me the option to run the configurator, and I'm going to do that now. So this is the configurator. Now, likewise, we enable you to do this fully in PowerShell. So if you need to script out your environments, and we'll show you some PowerShell scripts that we generate right from the configurator as well, so it will help guide you through what the PowerShell commands look like. So just to remind you where we're at, I'm on the database server. I'm going to do my first installation of the databases. So I run the configurator. I select databases as my features to add. And then I'm going to do a prereq check. And then it's going to prompt me for some configuration information. So the first is the name of the server. Now, this happens to be the server I'm running the configuration on. I could actually run this from any server that connects to that database. I'm going to use the default instance because we didn't create any special instances. I'm going to take the default database name. And now I need to configure two groups. Now remember, we've showed you a picture about how the groups work, and then Nate showed you in the domain controller these two users that we use to have read-write access or read access. The read-write access is for all the web services. The read access is for the reporting services. So that account is MBAM app pool. And the account for read access is on the domain as well. It's called MBAM Reports Service. And so now the compliance database is configured for both read-write access, for the account that's going to have read-write access, and the account that's going to have read access. I'm going to do the same thing for the recovery database. I'm going to run that on this server. I'm going to pick the default instance as well as the default database name. And now on recovery, we don't do any reporting against it, so you don't need to configure the reporting, the read-only account. You only need to configure the account that is going to do read-write. And I'm going to use the same app pool account. Now, when I click Next, we actually go through the trouble of validating that all those accounts connect and that that machine exists. And then once we click Add, we do the work to go through that configuration. So that's what's happening right now. While that's running, let me just quickly show you one of the scripts. So this is PowerShell right here. Scroll up a little. The installing the databases are the first two commands you see here, enable database, enable MBAM database. I'm going to run another session of the MBAM configurator to enable reports, but at least you get to see the PowerShell that we use under the covers to configure if you choose to use PowerShell instead of the configurator. So we finished installing the databases. Let me bring up SQL Server Management Studio, and now we can see connect to this machine, and you'll see right here we have the MBAM compliance status database and the MBAM recovery and hardware database. Let me also connect to the second machine, and you'll see here that we do not have the databases for compliance and recovery. We're going to go create those. We're not going to run the MBAM installer to do that, though. We're going to create an availability group, and it will do that for us. So to create an availability group, has anybody ever created an availability group before? A few of you, very few. You're not counted. Britton is a PM on our team. So the first thing I'm going to do is, before you create an availability group, you have to back up the databases. So I'm going to use the default backup, which is installed with SQL Server. Obviously, in a complex IT environment, you're going to have a reasonable backup solution. We're just going to do something trivial right here now. So now that databases are backed up, I'm going to run the availability group wizard. So let me zoom out. Zoom back in to the availability group wizard. So this is part of SQL Server. It's going to ask me for a name of an availability group. I'm going to call it SQL AG. And it's going to ask me to select the databases that I would like to support under clustering. So I'm going to select the two MBAM databases that we just installed. The next thing it's going to do is it's going to ask me to configure my replicas. So these are the servers where the databases are going to be replicated. It's already selected the server I'm on, which is MBAM SQL 1. I'm going to add a replica, which is the second server running in a different VM, and it configures it as a secondary server. Now, there's some additional parameters that you can configure around availability groups. You can set up for automatic failover, for synchronous commit. You can also set it up so that the secondary machine is used for read scenarios. So it's not just sitting there in the background, it can actually be used to query. I'm going to leave those alone for now. Just take the defaults, but you're welcome to configure those differently for your environment. The only other thing I need to do is configure a listener. Now what a listener does is it creates a DNS entry that represents connecting to any one of the databases. So I'm going to call this MBAM SQL. I'm going to give it a port, and the UI here is a little hidden. I got to go add an IP address. I'm going to add a static IP address. And now that I've done that, I'm going to click Next. There's one other thing I have to configure. So replication needs to be set up. There's different ways that SQL Server will support configuring that availability group and how it wants to share information. We're just going to use a share that's available on this server. It's going to take a backup, the backup that we just created of the database, and it's going to use that backup, copy it over to the other machine, rehydrate that database, and then set up synchronization so we're all ready to go. So it does some checks. And then when I click next, it's going to actually run that. So now it's creating the listener, it's going out to our DNS server, creating the name MBAM SQL, which when we connect with the web servers later on, you'll see we're going to use that name rather than MBAM SQL 1 or MBAM SQL 2. It will use that name, and then the cluster will figure out which machine to hit it with. And then it also then goes and creates the copy on the other machine. So let me open up MBAM SQL 2 again. And now you'll see there are two databases there. Actually, we caught it in a good time. It's still creating the two databases. It says restoring. And once it gets those restored, it will then synchronize. Okay, I'm just going to let that run. The last thing I want to do is to configure MBAM reporting. So I'm going to rerun the configurator tool. And I'm going to do another add feature. And this time I'm going to select reports. It's going to do a prereq check, and it's going to ask me for some configuration. So we're running in standalone mode. As Nate explained early in the presentation, you can choose to, instead of using SSRS, SQL Server Reporting Services, for reporting, compliance reporting, you can choose to use your System Center Configuration Manager environment. And basically what that does is it just uses the regular System Center agent that runs on devices. It will pull basically from our client information about whether or not the computer is in compliance with the policies that have been pushed down to that machine. So we're running standalone mode here, so I need to do some configuration to set up SQL Server Reporting Services. I'm going to pick the default instance, but now I need to pick a group. This group is the group that's going to be given permissions to the reports. So as Nate showed earlier, this is called MBAM Reporting Users Group. So I'm going to pick that group. And now I have to tell SSRS how to connect to the database. So I'm going to specify MBAM SQL 1. I'm going to leave the database name alone because we took the default. And I'm going to use the account that the reporting services uses to connect to the database. So there's the account that users have to be a part of to have access. That's the first one we just used. And then there's the account that the SSRS uses to connect to the database. That's the one we're going to configure now. Remember, from before, that is MBAM Reports Service. And now this time, I have to enter a password. SSRS caches that password so it can connect to the database. So when I click Next, it's going to do that check, make sure it can connect. And I'm going to, as soon as this finishes, I'm going to click Add. It will go ahead and add the reports. Hopefully, I did not enter an incorrect password. It worked. Yay. Okay, great. So let me close down this VM. We are all ready to go from our database back in, and we are going to switch back over to PowerPoint. And I'm going to turn the time back over to Nate. He's going to show you how to set up a web farm that has MBAM installed and ready to go.
Great. So we've configured this SQL cluster already using availability groups. If you have an existing cluster with 2.5, you can just install those bits into that existing cluster, which is really nice. But now we're actually going to focus in on the next half of this, which is the MBAM websites. And you'll notice that in order to do this, you've got to set up a load balancer. Once you do that, you basically install the MBAM binaries. You configure those MBAM, use the MBAM configurator to set up the websites. And then we'll do a little bit of customization, which I'll show in branding and so forth. The other thing that's unique to version 2.5 is we have to do an extra step with delegation. And I'll explain that in a minute as to why that's necessary. But it's really because we moved from a local account to an AD account to run the websites. Okay? So let's dive into some demo. Switch machines here. All right, we're going to open up MBAM Web 1. Sign in here. Okay, great. Now, this basically has some of the prereqs already, which is basically IIS is the major one. And we'll come in here and we'll run the MBAM server configurator. We'll go through the same process, except for this time, we'll set up the front-end websites. Okay. Click Next. And it's checking your prereqs, making sure IIS is correct, making sure you have ASP.NET MVC installed, and some other prereqs. If you are missing any of these, it will actually prompt you and tell you, hey, you need to go do this, and it will kind of guide you through that process. Okay, we found the prereqs. We're good to go. Now we need to select a certificate. Now this is the certificate that you actually want users to access your self-service portal or help desk with. Okay, so I click Browse. It takes just a minute. And here we go, BitLocker Recovery. Select that cert. And it filled in the host name for you. Okay, this is to make sure that HTTPS is configured correctly. If you didn't have a cert, then you would get a warning that says, hey, this is not a secure environment. Oh, I just lost it. Let's try it one more time. And we're going to actually use the same, the default install path. We're going to use the same port number. And we're going to configure the MBAM app pool account, so corp.mbam app pool. Okay?
Nate, you want to zoom in?
Oh, thank you. Let me zoom in. There you go. You can see it better. Now, with the password, again, we have to put this in because IIS will cache this and use it to authenticate. Okay. Now, the SQL Server name. What's cool here is that we can actually put in the listener or the cluster here, which is MBAM SQL. Okay, we're not using any different instance. The database name is the same. We have two different databases, but they're all configured the same to the same endpoint. Okay, and now it's asking, great, what AD group do you want to give access, or what users do you want to give access to actually access the advanced help desk? So we'll go ahead and type in MBAM Advanced. We've already created this group. And we'll do the same thing here. MBAM Help Desk, check name. We're not going to use System Center configuration. If you click this box, that basically says, oh, you don't need any reports from the help desk, at least the compliance reports, because you're using System Center. This next thing is, what is the group that has access to the reports? Okay, so this is the reporting group. Jeff entered this before to give access rights to the database. And this next one is a little bit confusing for people. This is, where do you access the reports? We don't actually host the reports in IIS. We use SQL Service Reporting, okay? So normally what this is, unless you've changed it, is it's the name of the SQL box. Thank you. Okay. And so this would be mbamsql1.corp.contoso.com. The virtual directories is how do you want to access? Oh, thank you. Good thing Jeff is here. Thank you. Report server. Okay. This is the default of where you can access your reports. The virtual directories are essentially the directories or the paths when you go to BitLocker Recovery / help desk or / self-service portal. That will redirect you to the two portals. Okay, you can configure that name. Click Next. This is, again, going through, making sure that you can access the report server. It checks the groups that they exist. And if all goes as planned, it will show you a summary screen here in just a second. It's also useful to know that that this will export to PowerShell. We're actually going to do that. This is an important critical step for us because we want to mirror this same configuration on the other web server. Okay? So export this, save it, click add, and it will go through the process of adding these websites. Essentially what this is doing is it's copying the files over, it's configuring IIS, it sets up a web config file, and you're good to go. Now you'll notice that we actually get a warning here, and this is on purpose to show you this, because this is a new requirement for 2.5. We actually are using the AppPool account, and it needs to have delegation so that it knows that it can pass credentials from the websites to the web services. All right, so let me show you quickly how that is done. Okay, here is the AppPool account. This has been configured already. This AppPool account has what we call a service principal name to support the BitLocker recovery URL. So we click on delegation. We say we want to trust a user for delegation. And what we're looking for here is the service or the SBN that we want it to be able to delegate rights to, which in this case is on itself. Okay? So we're going to type in mbam AppPool. Okay? Check the name. It found it. And there it is. This is the service that's tied to this account. Perfect. Click OK. Click Add. OK. And now delegation is properly configured. So if we go back to the Web 1 box, this error has, or this warning has been addressed. Now I want to show you one more thing here that's important on the client is if you have clients that don't have access to the internet, then you'll need to do kind of a little workaround so that they can access the JavaScript files that they need. Otherwise, it just assumes you have access, it'll go to Microsoft CDN and pull these for you. This is kind of an all-inclusive environment. We don't have that, so I'm going to show you how to do that. The other thing that this will provide is it will allow us to brand these websites, or at least the self-service portal a little bit. Okay? So I'm going to bring up Explorer, go to C, inetpub, BitLocker Management Solution, and it's the self-service website is the one we care about. And it's a pretty flat structure, just a few folders here, but we're going to go into scripts and add these JavaScript files. Okay, we'll copy these, switch back, paste them. Yes, continue for all of these.
You can zoom out. Yeah.
Okay, great. Now you have to make a slight modification in the web config file. And this is basically changing the files to point from the CDN to actually point to the local scripts now. And I've done that for you. So we'll copy that over. Continue. And I don't want to go into detail here, but you'll notice that this has a lot of configuration things you can change.
Zoom in.
For example, here is your company name.
Zoom in.
Thank you. Here's the company name. And then here are the actual paths to the JavaScript files that I changed. Okay? Perfect. Web server 1 is set up. Now, once we've done that, it's actually fairly easy to do web server 2 because we can just copy the PowerShell. Okay? So we exported that PowerShell. I've actually already copied it over. All right. So we have this script that it generated for us from the previous one, and I haven't made any changes. It's identical to what was there. Okay? So I'll go ahead and pull up PowerShell. And this needs to be run as an administrator. Okay. So we're going to go to CD users. Whoa. Step back a minute. Users. Administrator.corp desktop. And there it is, add MBEM features. We'll run this. Now it's going to ask for the credentials. And it will ask for several times because it's going to set up each of the different pieces or the components. It doesn't cache these in the script for security reasons. In fact, you can look at the actual script while this is running and see what it's doing. Okay? So the first thing it does is it sets up the administrative portal.
Got to zoom.
Thank you. It sets up the agent service, which is the service that the clients actually talk to. Okay? So this is the escrow point. And the next thing is it sets up the self-service website portal. Okay, it's probably asking for credentials. Let's go back. And it should probably ask one more time. And if you installed the same certificate on each of these, then you probably don't have to make any changes to the PowerShell. Okay, one more. It's almost done. It's setting up the self-service portal here. Okay, while this is going on, we're going to basically prep for copying the jQuery files over. We want these to be identical. If, for example, you branded one machine and not the other, then the user will get a different experience as you're in a web form. Okay, so let's go to inetpub, mbam, self-service scripts. We'll do this quickly as you've already seen it. Okay, copy these over. Yes, continue. And we'll replace the web config as well with the path changes and branding changes. Great. Okay. Now, if everything has gone as planned, then we should be able to go to the client and actually see that this is working. All right. So let's close this, open up the client. I'm actually going to restart the client. And the reason why is because we set up delegation and we want to make sure that the client gets the right Windows authentication or the Kerberos tickets. Okay, this will be fairly quick. We'll log in just as a regular user here, user one. Okay. Bring up a Internet Explorer. Let's go full screen here so you can see this. And I'm going to type in, so you can see the address bar. Come on. Zoom back out. HTTPS, because we're using a secure connection. BitLockerRecovery.corp.contoso.com. Okay, click Enter. And if this works successfully, then it should redirect us to the self-service portal. If I wanted to go to the help desk portal, then I would go /helpdesk. Takes a minute the first time, and we're in. So here we've branded it with techedcontoso.it. You can also configure this notice, and I'm going to click I've read this, continue. And a quick test to see if it's working is type in 12345678, give it a reason, and it's going to give us back an error because we don't actually have that key in the database, but the database we're expecting is invalid key ID. So we've successfully created an end-to-end high availability web farm, clustered SQL, fantastic, it's working.
Yay!
Let me switch over real quick to the PowerPoint because there's one point that I want to make sure that everyone's aware of before we go too far. Normally, well not normally, but often when an actual customer gets to this point, they'll bring up the client And the first thing they'll see is a little pop-up that comes up that asks for a username and password. If you see this, that usually means something is misconfigured. Okay? It's probably Windows Authentication. And I solved that in my case by rebooting the client, and it would pick up the right ticket. There's another couple things you should look for. First, make sure that bitlockerrecovery.corp.contoso.com, in this example, is considered part of the intranet. Okay? You can do that in the internet settings or push that down via policy. The second thing is this thing called an SPN, or a service principal name. Whenever you have an account that runs a service, you need to know, you need to give it a name. This name is BitLocker Recovery in this case, and it's tied to the app pool account. In previous versions of MBAM, this was tied to a machine account. So if you're upgrading from 1.0 or 2.0, then you should really unconfigure that, let MBAM run through its setup, and it will configure it properly for you if you're a domain admin. If you're not a domain admin, it will try its best, but it will give you an error with a message of telling you how to configure that. Okay? Great. So, now we're going to talk about the next client-side part of MBAM.
And that's my turn. So, we made a number of changes in 2.5 to the MBAM client. We're going to primarily focus on enforced policy, but I just want to mention some of the other things we've done. The challenge that we're trying to address, the feedback we've got from customers, is that MBAM provides a great service to capture recovery keys and helps report compliance, but there needed to be more of a push to help all of the clients and all the users on those clients to go through the BitLocker recovery process. If you have experienced MBAM 2.0 or previously, they would get prompted, but they could always cancel that prompt to encrypt, particularly when they needed to enter a PIN or a password. So we've added this feature called Enforced Policy. We'll show you a very quick demo of what that looks like. As part of that, we also added some complexity to PINs and made sure that your requirements around PIN numbers when used with a TPM plus PIN encryption policy satisfies your security requirements. So let me just jump right back over to our client quickly. And I hit the wrong button. Great, so here's the client. I go full screen, close the self-service portal. So what I'm going to show you is really quite simple. We're going to fake policy here for a second. So I have a couple of registry files that set the policy on this local machine only. And then as part of setting that policy, I'm going to run the MBAM client. And I'm going to do that manually. So I'm going to change over to where MBAM is installed. And there's this tool called MBAM. There's this UI called MBAM Client UI. I'm going to run that. But let me first apply the policy. So the first policy I'm going to apply is a policy that that specifies to enforce encryption and grants the user 20 days to apply to follow that policy. So let me run that. It's going to tell me I'm going to apply policy. Great. And I'm going to run the client UI. Now, what you notice here is the client will pop up. So the way the MBAM agent works is it runs on a timer, and every once in a while it'll wake up. It'll analyze the policy that's been pushed to the machine. It'll compute a difference between the state of the machine and the policy that's been specified, and it will determine a set of actions. Well, in this case, we've pushed a policy that says that the device needs to be encrypted with a password. And we've said it must be encrypted within 20 days from receiving that policy. So you see here, the date is 20 days from today. And it allows the user to either postpone that work, because maybe they're working on a presentation, or it allows them to go ahead and start the process, in which case they become compliant. So let me kill that. And I'm now going to apply a second policy, and this is just going to show you what happens when the grace period expires. So this policy sets the grace period to 0 days. I'm now going to run the MBAM client one more time. Let me zoom in. Now you notice I get a different UI experience. It detects that the user has not yet come into compliance. It determines that I'm using a password encryption policy, and so password requires the user to enter that. So it prompts the user for a new password. Once the other cool thing about this, and maybe you think it's cool if you're an IT pro, if you're a user, you probably hate this. The window itself sits on top of all other windows and cannot be closed. So it may be a little intrusive based on feedback we've gotten from you all or from other customers. It's enough to get the user to go through the process and begin encryption. So once they enter a password, hit create password, it will go ahead and start encrypting the device. Great, let me go back to PowerPoint. Let me just summarize a little bit about enforced policy. So there's a grace period. That grace period is computed based on when the policy arrives to a device and when the MBAM agent wakes up and analyzes that policy. And so you can set that to be 10 days, 30 days, 90 days, or 0 days in this case, in which you will force all clients to exercise that policy. Now, enforcement can prompt the user or not. It depends on your encryption policy. For example, if you set up to use TPM only, once the grace period expires, MBAM will just go ahead and encrypt the device. It will never interact with the user. If your environment requires a little more than just TPM encryption, for example, if you use TPM plus PIN or password, as we showed in the example, then you will get a user experience that will prompt the user for that information before it begins the encryption. And once the grace period expires, it will force them to enter that, or otherwise they can't close the UI. Great. So let me, one last area that we wanted to cover, performance. Previous versions of MBAM, we scaled to, I think our recommended scale was, I think, about 100,000 clients. We also had pretty significant server requirements in terms of what it takes to run MBAM on the server. We've done a bunch of work to improve performance. Let me just show you the sizing guidance that you can see online as well in our documentation. It's fairly reasonable for a server. And in our test environments, we've used this environment to scale up to 500,000 clients. And those tests were all clients running the escrow service in terms of calling the server and escrowing keys, and roughly all simultaneously. So it scales fairly well compared to previous versions. Great. So now let's summarize. We're going to have plenty of time for you to do questions. We'll have a microphone to pass around so the questions can be recorded. We'll just give you an overview of what we talked about. We talked about primarily an introduction to MBAM for those of you who are new to it. We also introduced you to some of the more complex scenarios of 2.5. We talked about configuring MBAM both for web farms as well as for SQL clusters. And we showed you the difference between the configuration and the installation and how we separated those out. We also support PowerShell today, which we previously not supported in terms of configuring an MBAM environment. And then we talked a little bit about some of the changes we've made in policy and supporting clients and making sure that your compliance numbers, for those of you especially who have government requirements or organizational requirements, can get those compliance numbers up. So that's it in summary. You may now applaud. Thank you very much. If you have questions, please grab a mic. I'm not sure Anna or someone else has a question or has the microphone. Otherwise, you're welcome to come up and ask us questions. Look at the demo environment if you like. There's a question over here. A question back there first. Great, exactly.
So how can we upgrade from MBAM 2.0 to 2.5?
I'm sorry, I could not hear you.
How can we upgrade from 2.0 to 2.5?
Great, I'm going to let Nate take that question.
Sure. So there's a little bit of a process to go from 2.0 to 2.5. The process is essentially you uninstall MBAM, but it will keep things in place in terms of your database and so forth.
and then you'll run through the setup and the configurator on 2.5. That's the basic gist of it. The other thing you'll want to watch out for is the service principal names. You'll really want to unconfigure that and then put that back. But once that's done, then you're in a pretty stable spot. Nothing in your database has changed. In fact, we upgrade that database for you to the latest version, and then you're in a good spot.
And the biggest issue we've seen customers have is with the SPN, usually because they're not a domain admin or they configure it wrong. And you'll know pretty quickly because you'll have authentication issues. Question over here.
How easy is it to tie this into, for example, authentication from the outside with ADFS?
So is your question about I have ADFS and I have, like I'm using AAD, Azure Active Directory?
For example, or internal authentication, but having serving requests from the outside, because this is a self-service portal.
Sure.
So you might want to also handle the clients from the outside when they can't get on.
Sure. We do have customers who have pushed the self-service portal into a DMZ and then do use ADFS to do authentication. It should just work.
Okay.
And I believe we've tested that.
Our biggest recommendation is you use a VPN access for that.
Yeah, that's right.
And we're looking at what scenarios we can do to simplify that process that you're talking about.
There's a question there and a question up here.
Thinking about this question, what's happened because I'm really having a problem because I have a Salesforce spreading over the Brazil, okay?
Yes.
And I forced this one, an MBAN one, and they started over the encryption, but inside in his home, and I don't have this one in the DMZ, and they forgot the password. So I believe the best way is start just when the client has a communication to the server and not just when he's available to do it, you know?
You want to take that or do you want... So did you get that? So I think what you're saying is you're giving us feedback that we really shouldn't encrypt the device unless the device can actually connect and escrow the keys,
yeah,
because otherwise they're going to get an encrypted device. Now,
yeah,
that was on MBAM 1.0.
Yeah.
I believe in 2.0 we fixed that so that if the escrow key cannot be escrowed, if the recovery key cannot be escrowed, MBAM does not enforce the policy.
What's happened if the user start the encryption without any connection?
It does. It does, and that's one of the challenges. We've gotten a lot of feedback about scenarios where devices sit outside of the internet. We're looking at things like that because there's scenarios both in terms of escrowing the key where, like you said, you have salespeople sit outside and you want to get those keys escrowed. There's likewise recovery scenarios. Somebody's in an airport, machine dies and they need to recover, can't get their VPN, obviously, because the machine's dead. So we're actually thinking really hard about those scenarios. We'd love to have you come up and give us some more details on what you're doing, because that'll help us understand, make sure we get it right in future versions.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay, another question. I think I saw a hand back there. Right there.
The upgrade process from 2.0 to 2.5, if I have reports in my configuration manager database, is there any difference?
They're very similar, yeah. The 2.0 and 2.5 reports haven't really changed much. The upgrade process is similar to what I talked about before. And it will basically remove those and re-add those into SSRS.
SCCM.
Oh, SCCM. Oh, yes, it's the same.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, great.
It's sometimes a pain to activate the TPM chip in the BIOS of the notebooks. Do you have some tips and tricks for this?
Good question.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because it changes depending on what version of Windows you have. Windows 7, by far, is the most complex to get the TPM up and running because MBAM actually tries to take ownership. In Windows 8 and 8.1, that's actually ownership by the OS, And they tried to do that very early on in the process. And it's a much more streamlined process. Does that answer your question? Okay, great.
Yeah, we actually don't control TPM configuration. We try to early on, especially in Windows 7, but in Windows 8, it's, you know, provisioning is, happens early on, and we don't get to control that. If you have some feedback, we'd love to hear it. We'll talk to the Windows guys about that as well. Great. Any other questions? Like I said, you're welcome to come up and drill us some more. Thank you for being here.
Yes.
Bye.
Thank you.
That helps my ego. Thank you.